These crimes, which are listed on the left-hand side, are felonies. These are the end of the emergency use authorization. And the first time any of us get an attorney general or U.S. attorney in our state to actually file these charges, Pfizer and Moderna will pull the vaccine instantaneously because they know that if the EUA goes away, the liability lands back with them. You know what they did in 1986? They moved that liability very comfortably over into the public taxpayer. The minute that liability lands on their balance sheet, I can guarantee you not a single one of those companies will sell another vaccine. And I don't mean not just SARS vaccine. I mean no vaccine. So if you want to end it, let's actually fight the battle that ends it. Let's not try to win a skirmish and let the war be won by the industry. Let's actually fight the war. And the war is about getting rid of the shield of immunity so that you cannot make a product that is a toxic product that you inject into any human for any reason at any time, period. That's the war. That's the war. Let's stop pretending this is a coronavirus story. Let's stop pretending this is a COVID story, because it isn't. This is a story which is they were desperate to find a pathogen model which would get us addicted to their industrial model of vaccines. That's the war. And we're pretending like COVID's a story. No, it isn't. Now, if it took COVID to wake some of us up, that's fine. But let's stop thinking that we're woke when we figured out COVID was a sham. The entire shield of immunity is the target. And until that shield of immunity is taken down, and until every one of the beneficiaries of that shield of immunity is taken down, until that happens, we have not won. And let's not set out little objectives. If we are going to take this seriously, ladies and gentlemen, let's take it seriously. This is an us for humanity story. And if us for humanity is going to stand together, let's stand for something. Let's not book a win and go, well, we got them on this one little technicality. No. Until the shield of immunity goes, we're not done. You've heard about the Jacobson case, because it's the most misquoted case. And for those of you who are out there wondering about Jacobson, let me clarify the actual case of Jacobson. Jacobson did not legalize mandatory vaccines at all. What Jacobson did was it said, you're legally given an opt-out, which is a $5 fine. Did you hear what I just said? That's what the Supreme Court ruled. What the Supreme Court ruled was not that there's a legal vaccine mandate. What the Supreme Court ruled was that you could, in fact, charge a $5 opt-out fine. Now, I've made this statement many times in many audiences. I said, well, what if we did a GoFundMe crowd campaign? Let's be pro-Jacobson. So let's us be pro-Jacobson. And not just for ourselves. Let's do it for everybody. Let's raise a fund where every citizen of America gets a $5 voucher, which is their Jacobson voucher. Wouldn't it be funny to watch CNN try to spin the anti-vax movement just became pro-Jacobson? I'd laugh my ass off. And I would, because it would be funny. Because that's actually what Jacobson said. You could actually pay a $5 fine or get the vaccine. So guess what? Let's be pro-Jacobson. Let's give them the biggest editorial nightmare that they could imagine. Because it turns out that in 1933, the Supreme Court made it abundantly clear. In this case, by the way, nobody even talks about, which I find fascinating. The Home Building and Loan Association Bladesville case decided in 1934. It was actually argued in 1933. But read exactly what it says. Emergencies do not create power. The whole premise of this argument was that somehow or another states could do things during emergencies that justified whatever march-in they did. But read specifically what I have in bold. It's actually really important. They are not altered by emergency. The powers granted in the Constitution, the powers granted to states, the powers granted in our civil society are not altered by emergency. You can't spin that. You can't misinterpret that. They're very clear. That is the Supreme Court case. That's the case we should be referring to. How many of you have actually heard of the Bladesville case before today? You know what? That's a tragedy. Because when I say Jacobson, everybody's heard of that one. That's the one we should know about. And nobody talks about it. Well, not nobody. Some crazy, bald-haired, bow-tie-wearing, crazy guy from Virginia talks about it. But it turns out that this is the one we should all be talking about. Because when we say that, hey, by the way, no state had the authority to do any of their mandates, that's why I'm saying it. Because no state does have the authority. And that's an important thing that we have to keep in mind. Now, with an eye towards your questions, I wanted to make sure you saw this. No audience has seen this before, so you are the first, and it's an important slide. Most of us are not familiar with the difference between a pirate, a privateer, and just a ruffian. I want to make sure that we get these clear. Okay? A pirate, we all know, kind of swashbuckling, you know. Think me, that sexy, only Johnny Depp. Because I have to bring me down a little bit, right? So a little Johnny Depp-ish kind of swagger. Think of that. That's a pirate. A pirate is somebody who goes around just robbing and raping and pillaging and marauding and doing general piratey things. A privateer is somebody who's given the legal sanction to do the same thing. That's why I'm using the term privateer. Because these are the people who are, in fact, the ones who are, in fact, given license to profit from the mass killing of humanity right now. And I want to make sure that their names are known to everybody. So guess what? That's why this slide is here. And you'll notice that on the left-hand side, you see a bunch of companies where you sit there going, Dave, I haven't heard much about those companies. They're the ones that got all the money. Did you know that? All of the money. The ones on the left. Uh-oh. All the money went to the ones on the left. And you don't know about them. What you do know about is the ones on the right, right? You know about those. But you don't know about the ones on the left. Except all the money went to the ones on the left. Pfizer, Moderna, Johnson & Johnson, Merck, Gilead are subcontractors of Answer. Oh my goodness, it looks like somebody who just woke up and I thought I was speaking to a woke crowd. If I hadn't had this slide on the board, I can guarantee you I could have stood out in the hallway and I could have asked you, who is the prime contractor for this entire scam? And not one of you would have said Answer. You know why? Because that's not who you would have told that it was. You were told it was ATI, but you didn't know that either. How many of you knew about ATI? ATI, South Carolina, a very well-known company that's historical government contracts were in the field of dissemination of propaganda. Did you hear what I just said? Up until Operation Warp Speed, their principal contracts were in government-sponsored propaganda. And they were chosen as the prime contractor for the emergency use authorization vaccine. People, hello? You're getting this, right? A defense contractor, ATI, based in South Carolina, was the one that got the check. So every single dollar that flows through, and by the way, if you look at how that company went from a nobody to one of the top federal contractors in one calendar year, mysteriously, it was a no-name, and now it's in the top 10 list of federal contractors with people like Lockheed and Boeing and Raytheon and General Dynamics, like that size, and they got there in 1 year. And you go and ask the question, well, Dave, what is Answer? Well, I'm going to let you dig into that a little bit, ladies and gentlemen. I'm not going to answer all your questions, but I'm going to tell you it's a cover-up. The number of CIA cover-ups that have run through Answer is staggering. Go read their own contracting history. Don't take it from me, because I could be a conspiracy theorist. Read their own annual reports. Read their public statements. They are a cover-up. And they were put in place because the conspirators, including Pfizer, Moderna, Johnson & Johnson, Merck, and Gilead, knew that the PrEP Act was not going to give them a shield of immunity. Ah. They got a contract shield of immunity that none of you have actually read. Because they got a shield of immunity where the indemnified party is a cover operation. Which means that if I ever win and get people to focus on the criminality, there is a CIA cover organization called Answer, which is actually going to be the one that Pfizer and Moderna kick the liability to, They will bankrupt that company because that's what you do. And like all of the other tobacco settlements and all of the other asbestos settlements and all of the other things, they built this so that they knew that when they lose, they can crater the financially liable party. Did you hear? Like, wow, that's premeditation, isn't it? It's premeditation. You actually build a shell corporation which creates the illusion of immunity, and then you give that immunity under contract, which has never been disclosed, under contract to all of these guys, which means that when I do prevail, which we will, by the way, we will, and it's just a matter of time, we will prevail. But when we do, it's important for all of us to know a very important thing. The people who are vax-injured and the people who are dead because of this bioweapon, those people are never going to collect a dime because that company is set up to be the bankruptcy remote entity that will get the liability. Which means we, the people, have an obligation to the people who have been harmed. And by the way, one of the things I'm going to be doing tomorrow at the Red Pill Expo is setting up, but I'm advance warning you so you can actually be the first to know. We're going to set up a public fund to actually fund the victims of the bioweapon injuries. Now, the cool part about this is we're going to use some creativity, because what we're going to do is we're going to take advantage of my knowledge of how these corporate structures are set up, and then what we're going to do is have a little bit of fun. As these companies all go up in flames on the stock market, we're going to short them. And we're going to take the money that we make off of that and make sure that injured families get a benefit. Because why not? Forget Robinhood. They're going to write about this one for a lot longer than Robinhood got any cute men in tights bullshit, because I'm going to win that one. And it'll be Men in Bow Ties. That'll be the next Kevin Costner movie. Men in Bow Ties. You watch for that. How about Fours Marsh? Any of you know who Fours Marsh is? No. Largest PR contract in the coronavirus scandal. They're the marketing firm. Look them up, people. Look them up. They're the ones that are paying to make sure that we find the hospital that's overrun, find the young person who's died of COVID that we can actually pump up right before the FDA is voting on the approval of a vaccine for teenagers. They're the ones who are actually the ones getting the money to send to every media outlet, every story, every architecture, everything else, and they're all going through a prime contractor none of you know about. Public record. Now it's your record. Now it's your obligation, because now that you have this information, you have a moral obligation to do something with it. And the moral obligation is to make sure every law enforcement institution in your particular jurisdiction is aware of the fact that you know this is a criminal conspiracy, you know this is racketeering, you know it's organized crime, and if you do nothing about it, you will not sleep tonight because kids are dying because we knew about it and did nothing. So do something with this. This is important information. Palantir. Did anybody actually stop and think, how did Peter Thiel skate through a hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars, money losing, and then in the middle of COVID went public? Timing is everything, isn't it? Except it was a bad time to go public, wasn't it? Does anybody remember March, April, and May of 2020? Not necessarily a good time in the stock market, let's just say, okay? I run a bunch of funds. That was a bad time to be a fund manager because you watched the market go like this, except for one anomaly. Suddenly a company that had done nothing but lose money for over a decade, nothing but lose money, and not a little bit of money, they seem to be very good at losing $200, $300, and $400 million a year. I don't know how many of you are good at losing that much money. I think you could probably imagine a world in which you'd be good at losing that much money. That's a lot of money to lose. And they went public right in the middle of coronavirus, but they didn't really go public. They didn't have a traditional S-1, which is a material disclosure. They didn't have a traditional filing. What they did was they sold their stock, their private stock, into the public market. In other words, they privately enriched themselves on the back of a public offering, but they didn't have any of the public offering scrutiny that's afforded with a public listing. That's an interesting problem, isn't it? And they're the only company like that that actually did it. But look at the company contract that they got associated with coronavirus. Gotham Data Tracking. Now, I don't know how many Marvel comic book heroes we have out in our audience, or DC comic heroes we have out in our audience. But Gotham data tracking. If you were going to call something something, I don't know, and you're sitting in your marketing meeting, you're sitting in there kind of having your round table conversation about, hey, let's come up with some marketing ideas. Let's just spin some stuff against the wall. What mentality of a human being goes, hey, go back to that one. Gotham data. Gotham, yeah, Gotham. That nobody should have any problem with that, right? Every story we've ever had with Gotham in it seems to have turned out really great. People, I only offer this in humor because the tragedy of it is so much more painful. This is pissing in the eyes of humanity and wondering why there are tears in your eyes, right? They have such contempt for humans that they actually have the audacity of calling their system, which is the system that monitors your movement, that monitors your VAC status, that links your VAC status with your bank account, that links your VAC status with your Social Security account, that links your VAC status with immigration, that links your VAC status with your shopping habits. That data tracking system is called Gotham Data Tracking, and Palantir got that contract for COVID. And Publicist Sapient. What I love about this presentation, people, is I love the looks on your faces. I wish you could all stand here and see the looks on your faces. Because I want to just share with you a closing comment. The reason why this presentation is so important is because we, the awakening, hear what I said, because I'm not giving anybody credit for being awake yet. Nobody. We, the awakening, are actually being lured into a trance by paying attention to the ones on the right. Those are the ones that we should be talking about. Those are the ones that got the checks. Those are the ones that had the lobbyists. Those are the ones that have the manipulation. Those are the ones that are shaping public conversation. Those are the ones we should actually be engaging, and we're actually making the mistake of thinking that our battle is on the right. Now, I'm not telling you that that exonerates the ones on the right, but what I am telling you is we, the people, better know who to aim for, because we have been had. And we had been had by a story that said there was a novel virus, that there was a novel disease, that there was a novel intervention that could only come in the form of an injectable. We have been had, and we have fallen for arguing over their cover story. Listen, we have been had. And my job is to simply say, it's time for us to actually take this thing seriously. Take the extra time, take the extra effort, and be the one in the room where people awkwardly go, but I thought you were going to talk about Moderna today. I am, and they're irrelevant. Moderna is a cover-up. Moderna has never produced a safe product in its history, ever. Never, never. And they were chosen as the front runner to make the first mRNA vaccine. That's the truth. 10 years they hadn't brought a single thing to market, and then mysteriously, they had an angelic visitation. An angel fell from the sky, landed in Massachusetts, and said, "What thou shalt do is make an mRNA vaccine for a thing that doesn't exist. We are going to send you in a computer code, we're going to send you the simulation of the spike protein that we think might have something to do with the thing that we're going to say doesn't exist, but does exist. We're going to send it to you. And by the way, we're going to do that in a material transfer agreement signed between the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, NIAID, and Moderna in November of 2019. People, what's the point of me talking? Those are the pirates. The only one I really want to talk about on that pirate list. Actually, I don't want to talk about any of them, because they're the pirates. But the pirate in chief is Ralph Baric. We need to call it what it is. It's piracy. Hey, the purpose of me being here today, beyond the fact that I was invited, which I'm grateful for, is because we actually have a battle ahead of us. And the battle ahead of us can only be even engaged if we start being sober. We have to enter into not reactionary, but sobriety level thinking. We need to know that when we're hearing a distraction, when we're pulled away by the storyline or the headline or the whatever else, that that is meant to take us off of our target. And our job is to actually start focusing in on what the real target is. The real target is a system that has never taken the time to define what life and health actually is. That's the real system. That's the real problem. And what I'm going to show you, oh, you want to see that just because it's cool graphic. I spent a lot of time on that one. Because that's just a cool one to get a snap picture of. But I'm going to close with this one thing. So there, that slide is up long enough. I'll send these slides around. I'll send these slides. I seriously will. We'll figure out. I don't know. Some part of Weston Price, just tell me where to do it. I'll send these slides so you get all of them, and then you can do whatever you want with them. This is how I want to end. In the spring of 1776, George Mason was sick and tired of going to meetings. He was sick and tired of sitting in room fulls of things in Philadelphia and in New York and in Richmond, where people go, "Oh, I hate British and I hate this and that." And he was tired of people running around talking about intolerable acts. Four intolerable acts, right? Four intolerable acts. The one that I found most interesting that seemed to get everybody's go is the Boston Harbor Act, which was British official blockade of the Boston Harbor. And that was the thing that really set the house alight. And George Mason's sitting there going, you know, we got a problem. And the problem we have is we actually haven't defined what a good solution is. What we're doing is complaining about the situation we find ourselves in. And we haven't spent any time actually asking questions like, oh, if we were the adults in the room, what would we do? Listen to what I'm saying. If we were the adults in the room, what would we do? Not, hey, we find this condition intolerable. And George Mason was the drafter in May of 1776 of the Virginia Declaration. And there's a missing word that you're waiting for me to say, and you're waiting for me to say it because he didn't say it. The Virginia Declaration was not a declaration of independence, it was a declaration. Jefferson is the one that gave us of independence and screwed our future. Seriously. Because if you go back and you read George Mason's declaration, he was actually saying what a human story could be. And 2 months later, what Jefferson did in the Declaration of Independence is he justified it. You know what doesn't need any justification? Humanity. We don't need any justification. We don't need to stand on the approval of anybody. We don't need a king. We don't need a monarch. We don't need a priest. We don't need a pope. We do not need anyone to authorize us to be human. We are inalienably human. And as inalienable humans, we actually need to make a declaration, not of independence from, because independence from has a half-life. It's only going to be persistent as long as the intolerable is also present. I don't want to be independent. I want to be at liberty. Did you hear what I just said? I want to be at liberty to stand in front of this room and have people come up and hug me. And do you know how many speeches I've been asked to give where I've been told in a contract to speak? And by the way, this is among the woke crowd, so don't think I'm talking about the bad people. I'm talking about the people you think are good people. The number of contracts I've gotten that actually say, do not mingle with the people who are coming because the only photos that are allowed to be taken are people who actually paid for VIP access. In contracts with woke people. Guess what I do? I stand in front of the room and hug people and take your picture. As a matter of fact, if somebody actually wants to, they can stand on the stage right now and take this picture with all of us and do the giant, you know what, to the people who think that we can't be human. Because we can and we should and we must be human. There you go. I knew I could get a photographer. Let's get in this thing together. Here we go. Let's do it together, everybody. We're human. Woo! Okay, but why is this important? This is important because we do not need permission. We don't need permission. We don't need authority. We are human. And we have six properties in a Declaration of Humanity that I'm going to close with. Number one, by nature, We are provisioned for life, liberty, and livelihood, unrestricted from provisioning, meaning that there's an abundant universe, and that abundant universe is with us as part of life. Number two, we are at liberty to peacefully assemble, speak, disagree, express, believe, and choose, because that's what we are. We have freedom of inquiry with the assurance of veracity and providence. That means it's not just we have the ability to say things, we have the moral obligation to say the truth. And it must be a truth that we have experienced, that we have learned. It's not us marketing and promoting somebody else's thing. When I speak to you and you speak to me, this is the truth. It's your truth, it's my truth, and together we find something. So the veracity and provenance is vital. We are at liberty to exchange value and commerce with transparency. We cannot be told what somebody should or shouldn't be able to sell. You know, if a cow, which I grew up hand milking, by the way, so that's why I have great grip hands. But if a cow actually offers milk, and I actually want to give that milk to somebody, I don't have to go through some sort of agency to approve what the hell I'm doing. Because at 4:30 in the morning, the cow and I had agency. She had a full udder, and I had hands that are freaking massive hands that are great at milking cows. We afforded access for all the derivatives of all public goods, and finally, we are organically undefiled from birth to death. And I will close with the one thing that I would encourage you to take from that last line. Most of you think I'm talking about what is injected or ingested, and I'm not. I'm actually talking about what you listen to and the words and thoughts you put in your head. Because the more damage is done with what we put in our heads than anything we get shot in our arms and anything we put in our mouths. Organically undefiled means live a life of sobriety and purity. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'll take a couple questions. Thank you for tolerating this moment. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Martin.
Thank you. Yeah, I've got it.
I feel like we are all better equipped to take on this battle thanks to your presence. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
For questions today, we are limited on time. So I ask that you please keep introductions and backgrounds brief and your questions
concise. Yeah, and let me just add, I really appreciate it. I think we have a break coming up, right? Is it after this? So what I'm going to do, just so you know, is I'm actually going to clear out so that people can be around, but I'm going to be available. I have to be in Lafayette tonight, but I'm going to be available between now and lunch, and I'm just going to be available. So if there's a place, and I don't know if there is, but, you know, I'm happy to engage with you. So, like, if we don't get to it, that's okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Aaron. This is not a question. This is a comment about Weston Price and eugenics. Because eugenics was a very big subject when he was doing his research.
Yes.
And when people talked about why you saw the degeneration of the facial structure, the response given that this was due to race mixing,
yep,
and that this somehow polluted the genetics of the human race. And Weston Price was so much above that. He said this is not due to any kind of race mixing. This is due to poor nutrition, which prevented the optimal expression of the genetic potential. And we are conditioned to believe that we have defects, genetic
yes.
defects. Our genetics is perfect. And it's a perfect gift from the Creator in all races, in all people. And we just need to learn how to bring out that genetic expression, and that's what this conference is about. Thank you.
Super grateful. And let me acknowledge, Sally, a couple things. I want to acknowledge, Hilda introduced me to this organization. Most of you don't know that I've worked in a lot of the same communities that Weston Price worked in Papua New Guinea and across the Pacific. And it wasn't until Hilda introduced me to you all that I actually started seeing the number of places that our feet had trod literally on the similar beaches and the similar highlands in the Pacific, which is actually really cool. And this is a very important point, because what I want to remind us of is there are still communities right now, and I've lived with them. In fact, I bear the elder's ring from one of them. There are still communities that actually haven't forgotten this, where the wild type of humanity is still fully being expressed. And so when we talk about the human condition, it's important for us to not be too arrogant to think that our expression is the expression, because you're exactly right. There are enormous numbers of wisdom traditions around the world, and I've had the great fortune of living with many of them, where they actually still understand that the harmonic dance between the earth and the human is the point. And so thank you for bringing that up. I appreciate it.
I want to thank you for recognizing and using your God-given talents as you have. I try to relate with that in a minuscule way comparatively, but I've been a student of GMO since 1994, and my focus of study and research has been from the ground up through the livestock and eventually into the humans. My question is, in all of the amazing work that you've done, is there a liability factor comparable to the companies that have brought that abhorrent act upon nature, comparable to what you showed us with the vaccine thing?
Yeah.
Can we get them?
Yeah, so it's a beautiful question, and I will answer it short, but I will give you the opportunity to get the long answer. In my book, Lizards Eat Butterflies, I actually address the long answer. I'm going to give you the short answer. In the early 1900s, a group of Japanese scientists found out that Bacillus thuringiensis was a known pathogen to the human gut. They did a bunch of modifications and testing. I don't know if you're familiar with the Japanese version of this work, but in the early 1900s, Japan decided that Bacillus thuringiensis was too dangerous to introduce into the food supply, into seed supply, into anything else, because it had such a horrible effect on the gastrointestinal tract. Despite knowing that, and this is where the answer comes, there's a willfulness act. And willfulness is, in fact, a treble damages argument for civil and criminal penalties. That's why I'm giving you this answer. When biological modification of mass-produced GMOs came into being, the agent they chose as the transfection agent was BT. BT, corn, cotton, soybeans, you name it. They chose, knowing this data, they chose to actually use an agent known to be a pathogen to humans as the transfection mechanism to get to GMO crops. And so, yes, there is an answer. It is the same problem, and the exact same industrial liabilities and criminal liabilities apply when it comes to GMO crops and the whole glyphosate nonsense and everything that we can go into that I'm not going to go into here, but all of that is material, and it's the exact same template. So thank you for bringing that up.
Thank you. My name's Kathy, and I'm from Lexington, Kentucky. And we drove here because we wouldn't wear a mask, so it took 13 hours to avoid a mask. And I guess my question to your wonderful presentation is a couple, that you have made me aware of these corporations like Answer, Forest Marsh, Palantir, and the Publicis Sapient group.
Yep.
That I wonder if who are the people behind them? Who are the ultimate
people? Yeah,
that's
the tomorrow.
Behind the curtain? What? And do we actually have an institution left, either in the United States or in the world, that we can rely on now that is not already corrupted?
Yeah, so that's a beautiful question, and let me give you an answer that will feel like I'm speaking in a parable, but it's actually the answer. I have a number of very close friends in Salt Lake who arranged for me to have a meeting with the president of the Salt Lake Senate, Stuart Adams. Stuart Adams is a lovely gentleman, and he accommodated a crazy travel schedule that I have. And at 8 o'clock in the morning on Wednesday, 2 weeks ago, I met with him in the Senate at the Utah Capitol. And he had a number of people. He had other senators there. He had a number of staff there. And I was warned when I went in that several people in the room were not only already injected, but were advocating for injection. So, I was told that I was going to enter into potentially a slightly hostile territory. I sat with him and I talked him through the bioweaponization, the spike protein, the ACE2 receptor. I told him about chimeric alterations. I told him about the fact that Kizzy Corbett, the person at Vaccine Research Center at NIAID, I told him about the fact that she publicly admitted that she could actually recreate the chimeric coronavirus in her home using her home computer. I shared that with him. What I found was that over a course of the first 15 minutes, there was an energetic resistance. There's a who are you, why are you qualified, blah, 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 blah. And by the way, for those of you who wonder, because a lot of people ask, I'll dispense with the question. I've worked for the federal government for a long time, okay? I have worked in covert operations. I have worked all over the place. So if you think somehow or another I have been somehow connected with any fill-in-the-blank alphabet soup agency, the answer is yes. I'm telling you publicly, and I tell you that because I was declared a national asset very early in my life, which means that the U.S. government has treated me like property. That's not a good thing. That's a terrible thing. And they've exploited things that I do and access to information that I have, and that's not a good thing. It's a terrible thing. But it turns out I've lived with it for a very long time. So anybody who wants to jump on the bandwagon of Dave's worked with the agency, yes, I have. I've briefed the director of the agency on the seventh floor at the headquarters, so I know what the Black Star Wall is. I know all of those things. So, but the point is simple. I've actually been given the access to every piece of those pieces of information, every one of those interactions, so that at this moment in time, I have the ability to actually speak the truth to absolutely every audience everywhere. Because it turns out that I was invited into the very organizations, the very individuals, and the very systems that are running this show, and they invited me in to seduce me to become one of them. And guess what? I stand here with my bald head and my bow tie and my boots on, and they have frozen all of my assets of my corporations. And you know what? I came here knowing that this is not a paid speaking engagement. You know why? Because this matters. We need to stop pretending like they have authority and power over us. Listen, they do not have a power and authority over us. And Stuart Adams, at the end of our meeting, and this is beautiful, because we had this lovely human moment, and he looked at me and he goes, I've seen a lot of your videos, I've read a lot of your content. He goes, but sitting in your presence, he goes, I know that what you're speaking is the truth. And I'm a grandfather, and I cannot allow this to happen to my grandchildren. Now, this is from a guy, who actually had made personal decisions that are his decisions. I'm not weighing in, I'm not judging, I'm simply saying, we did not get into a conversation of right and wrong. We got into a conversation of truth. And the high likelihood is Utah will be one of the first states where we actually get an attorney general to do the right thing. And it will be because Stuart listened and realized that he knew the difference between the paid lobbyists who come into his office all the time and a guy at 8 o'clock in the morning who actually was wearing a suit and had a bow tie and wearing boots and sat with him as a human and had a human conversation, which activated in him the grandfather conversation. Now, why am I saying this? People, there are not good and bad people. There are not good and bad people. There is not a villain out there that we need to go find and, you know, pillory in the village square. There is not a villain. There are people who have lost touch with humanity. And there are a lot of them. And our job is to keep that in our minds, because the minute we understand that we defile our interactions when we've judged somebody to be bad, we defile the interaction. We cannot expect a transcendent humanity if we do not bring that transcendence in our own expression of humanity. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to take the rest of the questions offline. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Yes. So, thank you so much, David. If you want more of David, like he said, he will meet with you. As you walk down the hall, there are some couches near the registration area where he can take more questions. Also, listen to him on the Wise Traditions podcast. I've had the privilege of interviewing him a couple of times, and he is just phenomenal and has more good stuff to bring. Let's give him another hand. And by the way, in a spontaneous decision, we are going to make this talk available to everyone. We're not going to withhold it behind any paywall because it's that important. Thank you.